Do you mix up your protons, your neutrons, and your electrons? I do. But no more. We're going very, very far outside of our comfort zones today with chemistry vocabulary on this chemical episode of
Aprender Inglés with Reza and Craig.
Hello, good afternoon, good evening, good morning. I'm Craig.
I'm Reza. How are you, Craig?
Very well, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm very well myself, thanks.
That's great. Reza and I have been teaching for a long, long time, and we're here to help you improve your grammar, improve your pronunciation, improve your vocabulary, and take everything connected to your English to the next level. Reza, do we have any email this week?
We certainly do, from Yolanda. She's asking us about the APTIS exam. APTIS, APTIS.
Hi, Yolanda.
Yolanda writes, I read something about the APTIS exam, which I think is a British Council certificate, or it's offered by the British Council, I don't know. You're right, it is. So, do you recommend people to do it? Is its value the same as Cambridge certificates? I was told it is easier than an EOI, an Escuela Oficial de Idiomas exam. I'd like to know how long it's valid for. It's cheaper than a Cambridge certificate, isn't it?
Well, Yolanda, first of all, how are you? I know Yolanda quite well. How are you doing? Yes, as Reza said, APTIS is a British Council exam, although it's more really for companies and organisations because it's a very flexible exam that can be adapted depending on the company that are testing their employees. So let's imagine, for example, there's a call centre in India. So a big company has telephone answering services in India or somewhere overseas. They can customise the exam for their employees, which means they can put their logo, their corporate image on the test, and it's very, very flexible. So they can actually choose which part to emphasize, if they want to emphasize the speaking or the writing or the listening. So it's very adaptable. It does have very high accessibility, which will be interesting for you, Yolanda. So people who are, for example, hard of hearing or have problems with visibility, then it is very, very good for accessibility. And it's also quite closely tied or mapped, we can say, to the CEFR, the Common European Framework for Languages, the European Standard. It is cheaper than most Cambridge exams, as you said. It's €70. That's the price on the website. Does it have the same value as the Cambridge certificates for FCE, PET, CAE, etc.? Reza, what do you think?
Well, I would have to say it isn't recognised as widely as a Cambridge exam around the world. That doesn't mean it isn't useful, but more people have heard and accept Cambridge exams, to be honest. Would you say so?
Definitely. I think, yeah, if you're looking for an English qualification, I think probably the best, if you're not sure exactly who the qualification is for, would be a Cambridge exam for your level. So I think that's more useful and better for you if you're not sure which employer you're going to be offering it to in the future. Some companies, some organizations, some universities specify which exam or which level test they want you to take. So you have to do that one. But if you don't know, if you're not sure, I would definitely study and pay to take a Cambridge exam. How long is it valid for? Is another of Yolanda's question. I don't know. Do you know, Reza?
No.
No idea. Sorry.
I looked on the website and couldn't find the answer.
I can tell you that the Cambridge exams do not have an expiry date. So when you take an FCE or a CAE or a proficiency exam for Cambridge, they give you the certificate, the pass, on the day you take the exam, so that's your English level on that day, and that never expires. So maybe your English gets worse over time, maybe it gets better, but there's no expiry date. Expiry date is fecha de caducidad.
Whereas the IELTS or the TOEFL tests do expire. I can tell you that.
Do you know how long they...
I think it's 2 years.
2 years, isn't it? Another of Yolanda's questions, is it easier than the Escuela de Idiomas exam, the Escuela Oficial de Idiomas? I don't know what the test of the Escuela Oficial de Idiomas is, so I'm not sure of the level of the English test. Do you have any idea?
No, because it changes quite frequently. Every year or two, they change their tests, so it's impossible to answer that question, really.
Also, I'm pretty sure that the APTIS test is similar to the IELTS and TOEFL test, meaning it's not an exam that you pass or fail. It's more a measure of your level. So you can't, I don't think you can pass it or fail it. You just get a result which gives you your level.
So A1, A2, B1, B2, C1, C2, everyone does the same test.
Yeah. So we hope that's answered your questions. Yolanda, thanks for your email, and I'll look forward to speaking to you soon. Next, we have a voice message from Maria and Alex, which is, I think, the first message we've received from a married couple. So let's hear what Maria and Alex have sent us.
Hello, Rasa. Hello, Gray. First of all, I would like to say thank you because I really appreciate your job. I consider myself addicted to your program, and I think that I improved my English step by step, so thank you very much. Well done. I would like to suggest a new topic for your podcast because I am a chemistry teacher and I would like to improve my vocabulary in science. So I really appreciate if you can include this topic in your podcast. Thank you very much. Bye.
Hello, this is Alex. I'm Maria's husband. Great job there. People, thank you very much. I love the way of learning English and at the same time learning about different topics, different aspects of the life. And as for the new topic, if you allow me, I would like to hear something from the figure of Michael Collins. I'm sure the Irish person know about it. Okay, thank you very much. Bye now.
Well, thank you very much, Maria and Alex. It was lovely to get your message. Just one thing about what you said, Maria. You said, I'm a chemistry teacher. With all professions, you need an article, the indefinite article. So I'm a chemistry teacher. So use a or an with professions in the singular. And Reza, did you notice anything about Alex's message?
Yes, you said, Alex, different aspects of the life. Again, a problem with an article, this time the definite article, the. You should leave it out and say different aspects of life, no article, because you're talking about life in general. And in that case, it's no the in English. If you want to revise that, you could go back to episode 41 of Aprender Inglés con Resi Craig. That was with Bea. Episode 41, we talked about the indefinite article and a and an and the zero article.
That's back in episode 41. So inglespodcast.com/41. Chemistry vocabulary, of which Reza and I know very little. We admit that from the beginning. So we apologize, Maria, for our lack of chemistry knowledge. But I did find some vocabulary from the web taken from Quizlet's flashcards. Now, we've mentioned Quizlet in the past. It's an app for your mobile phone to help you learn vocabulary. And very conveniently, they have grouped vocabulary with definitions around different topic and vocabulary areas. So if you go to chemistry vocabulary on the Quizlet website, you'll find a list from which some of these words have been taken. And there's a link in the show notes to take you straight to the Quizlet website. I think the first thing to say, Reza, perhaps is the pronunciation of chemistry, because sometimes I hear my students say chemistry, but you don't pronounce the CH, do you?
It's the K sound, like K, like in Christmas, CH, or Christina. Yeah, chemistry.
And there's also some confusion with the difference between chemist, pharmacy, and drugstore when you speak about the place where you can actually buy drugs or medicine. Drugstore's more American, isn't it?
Yes, definitely American English. And a chemist has two meanings in British English. A chemist can be a pharmacist, a person who works in a pharmacy, sells medication. Or a chemist could be just a chemist, but not a pharmacist. Somebody who knows about chemistry. Somebody who knows about mixing chemicals. That's the other meaning of chemist in British English. But in American English, they don't use chemist to mean pharmacist. They say pharmacist only in American English.
And if you sometimes see chemists with an apostrophe S, that actually means the shop. So chemists with an S. And there's a very famous one in the UK called Boots the Chemist that you may have seen if you've been to the UK. And if you go inside Boots, you see things like shampoo and soap and deodorant and shaving cream, that kind of thing, makeup. And there's a corner or a part of the Boots the Chemist store which is called the pharmacy. So that's the place where the pharmacist works and will sell you medicine, which you usually need a prescription for. So in that case, the pharmacy is inside the chemist in the UK. So Reza, let's look at some vocabulary connected to chemistry.
The most commonly known chemical on earth is water. So let's talk about that
I know that. I know that, sir. I know that, sir. H2O.
Well done.
Oh,
well
yes.
Done, H2O.
We're off to a cracking start.
In H2O. Other words, two particles of hydrogen to every one particle of oxygen, right?
Whoa. Particles or molecules?
Oh, now you got me. Now you got probably molecule, is it?
I'm not sure.
Don't know the difference.
Maria, what do you think?
Maria, we need your help. Is it two particles or two molecules of hydrogen to one of oxygen? Maria, please get back to us and let us know.
Well, let's not try and run before we can walk, because I think we've got some more vocabulary coming up soon. So the boiling point of water is what?
100 degrees C.
So you could say water boils at 100 degrees.
Or you could say 212 degrees. But how could that be?
Because that is the Fahrenheit scale. So F for Fahrenheit, C for centigrade, 100 degrees centigrade, or 212 degrees Fahrenheit. But this is at sea level, as Maria will know. At one atmosphere, at the level of the sea, that fact is true. However, if you go up a mountain, if you start to climb and you go up and you gain altitude, then it will boil at a lower temperature. Conversely, on the other hand, if you go below sea level, it will boil. You need a higher temperature when the atmospheric pressure increases. Is that right? That sounds good to me.
I don't know. I'm taking your word for it, Craig.
I don't know either, mate. I'm just reading.
One thing I do know is the higher up you go, the lower the pressure. That's for sure.
Yes, because
of the atmosphere.
Because when you're diving, like scuba diving, and right. You go under the sea, the pressure increases right. The more you go down.
Yeah. So whether that affects the temperature, I'm not sure. But I know the higher up, the lower the pressure. And the lower down, the higher the pressure.
Correct. What's absolute zero?
Absolute zero is one of the few things I do remember about my chemical lessons. It's a theoretical concept. It's hard to prove it. It's the lowest temperature, theoretically possible, when the movement of particles would be minimal or, in theory, zero. So it's called absolute zero because it's zero on the Kelvin scale, which would be minus 273.15 centigrade. So in theory, if you get to that low temperature, all particles stop moving.
I would imagine they would, because that's bloody freezing, isn't it?
But the thing is then, there's kind of debate about this, but if they stop moving, then in theory, they kind of cease to exist, which is a strange concept. because as we all remember from our days in chemistry, the colder things get, the smaller they get. Things expand when heated. And when they get colder, they shrink. So in theory, when things get to that size, they could just disappear. They no longer exist.
And I'm guessing that the Kelvin scale measures temperature. Is that right?
Yes. It's a special scale that's been prepared to go to this absolute zero. Yeah, when things will just stop moving and therefore there's no life in them.
Another expression is heat of vaporization. Or vapor is easy. It's very similar in Spanish, vapor. Vaporization, the process of becoming vapor. And the heat of vapor is the amount of energy required for a liquid to become gas. Now, if you're into chemistry or you'd like to learn more about it, I recommend going to YouTube and looking for Khan Academy Chemistry. Now, Khan is spelt K-H-A-N. He started creating videos on YouTube about physics. There are many, many excellent videos explaining chemistry, and it's a wonderful way to improve your knowledge on YouTube. There's a link at the show notes over at inglespodcast.com/165.
Craig, people often talk about how important it was when we first split the atom. To split is to divide. Well, what is an atom?
An atom is the smallest particle of matter possible.
What's matter?
Does it matter?
It does if you're a chemistry teacher.
Materia, I think. Substance, materia. Yeah. So the smallest particle of matter is an atom. Now, we're coming to some words that I do vaguely remember from my school chemistry lessons. The nucleus. Sometimes you speak about a nuclear family, don't you? Very concentrated, very focused. So the nucleus is the center of an atom, the very middle. Now, protons and neutrons always confuse me. What's the difference between a proton and a neutron and an electron?
Well, you've got me now, but I think it is, according to what I've been looking at on the internet recently, a proton is a particle in an atom with a positive charge.
Well, that makes sense, doesn't it? Because pro means for or positive.
And so a neutron is a particle with no charge. It's neutral, it's no charge.
So that makes sense too, because neutral and neutron, so neutral, yeah, no charge. And what about the electron?
Particle in an atom with a negative charge.
I remember from the chemistry books, the electrons were the ones that were whizzing around on the outside of the atom going very, very fast. And that's all I remember about electrons. There's a word I love, and I don't know what it means, but I just love...
Ask me, I know.
I love the sound of it. I will ask you. It's quark. It's Q-U-A-R-K-S. Reza, what are quarks?
Well, let's
sounds like the noise of a duck.
It does. Quark, quark. Let's take off the S. And quark is an extremely tasty type of German cheese. Have you ever tried it?
Quark?
Q-U-A-R-K. It's a very tasty type of German cheese. It's very low in fat.
Oh, yeah.
And very good for you. That is quark.
How interesting.
Yeah, but what are quarks? I have no idea.
They are smaller particles in neutrons and protons. Now, I don't think they had quarks when I was at school because I remember the atom, breaking down the atom, protons, neutrons, electrons. I don't remember my teacher speaking about quarks. I suspect they're quite recent.
I actually experimented with quarks. I ate quite a few when I lived in Berlin.
Is it actually a cheese then?
It really is a German tweed.
It's cheese. Called quark. It's a tweeze.
It's a tweeze. It's a tease. It's a una provocación. It's a tweeze. It's a tweeze. I have been confused by my own very bad German accent. I can't speak anything now.
It's a horrible, horrible accent.
Ich bin kaputt.
Sounds like a German Pakistani.
Yes. Oh, goodness gracious me.
Another expression Another expression I really liked after quark, which I love saying, quark, quark, is metallic bonding.
Oh, I know that. When two Metallica fans get together.
Yeah, because it sounds like a party for heavy metal fans, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Metallic bonding.
Yeah.
Something you do with Iron Man, for example, when you're having a beer with him. It's positively charged metallic ions surrounded by an electron cloud.
What's an ion?
I have absolutely no idea, but I do know it's the same word in Spanish.
Ah, that will
So if
help.
You know ion, that's what it is.
The next expression I do know about, because it's a very commonly used expression, not just for chemistry, but for everyday English, and that is chain reaction. A chain reaction, which is a chemical reaction, or any reaction, in fact, in which one action leads to another, which leads to another, and so on and so forth. And yep. I've included a video link which clearly explains what is a chain reaction.
Because chain is cadena. One more thing I remember from my chemistry teacher is the atomic number. What's the atomic number, Reza?
According to the piece of paper in front of me, it is the number of proteins in the nucleus.
No, not proteins, mate. Protons.
Proton. You see, I don't even know the difference between a proton and a protein. The number of protons in the nucleus of an atom, which is characteristic of a chemical element and determines its place in the periodic table. Craig, what's the periodic table?
Well, I'm pleased you asked me that, Reza, because the periodic table, I'm going to read from Wikipedia now to explain what the periodic table of the elements is. And this I do remember from chemistry, but we had to learn it, and I never ever did. And I think it's changed quite a lot since I left school. Anyway, the periodic table is a tabular arrangement of the chemical elements. The adjective tabular means it's a table, and it's arranged in a table form or format. So ordered, they are ordered by their atomic number. You see, back to the atomic number, the number of protons. It's also ordered by in the order of electron configurations and recurring chemical properties. Now, this ordering, the way they order the table, shows periodic trends, such as elements with similar behavior in the same column. So it's a bit like the phonetic symbols in a way, isn't it? They're grouped with similar properties. So whereas in the phonetic table, you'd get all the vowel sounds together, all the consonant sounds together, front of the mouth, back of the mouth. In a similar way, the periodic table is organized with periodic trends. It also shows rectangular blocks, four separate rectangular blocks with approximately similar chemical properties, and in general, with one row or period, the elements are metals on the left of the table and non-metals on the right. Do you know all this? Do you remember this?
I can't remember, but did you study studied this? It a long time ago, but I can't remember at all. I used to know a few of the symbols, but I've forgotten them.
Anyway, moving on, the rows of the table are called periods, the columns are called groups. And six groups have names as well as numbers. For example, group 17 elements are the halogens. I remember that word, halogens. I don't know what they are. And group 18 are the noble gases. Do you remember the noble gases?
Very noble. I trusted everything they said.
I trusted them completely. Yeah.
Very honest. And halogens, for me, halogens are a type of light you get in your bathroom.
Yeah.
A halogen light.
There must be some connection there with the light, halogen lights, and halogen lights on bicycles you can get as well. Anyway, noble gases include things like helium. That's a noble gas in balloons. Then there's the ons at the end, like the argons and the kryptons and the neons, neon gas inside neon lights, of course. Kryptons are from Star Trek, aren't they? Or is it Star Wars? Star Trek. Oh, no, that's Superman, kryptonite.
Kryptonite was his weak point, wasn't it?
It was Klingons from Star Trek, but I don't think Klingon is a noble gas. I think that's a character in Star Trek. The periodic table can be used to derive relationships or get relationships between the properties of the elements and predict the properties of new elements yet to be discovered or synthesized. So this periodic table gives a useful framework for analyzing chemical behavior, and it's widely used in chemistry and other sciences. So now you know. Do you know how many there are, Reza, in the periodic table? How many different elements are there in the table?
I'm not sure. How many?
Well, as of 2016, last year, the periodic table has 118 confirmed elements. I'm sure that's more than when I was at school. So the first element, element one, is hydrogen. The 118th element I have never heard of. It's organison, which is possibly a gas.
I have a fairly boring but thankfully short anecdote about something to do with the periodic table.
Please bore us.
I stayed in a village in the Highlands of Scotland, which was beautiful. In a previous episode, we talked about touring around the Highlands, and Craig taught you the word stag, which is terrible. Mm-hmm. This place was so beautiful that a stag came and was outside our bedroom window looking in at night. Beautiful.
Wow.
Anyway, this village is named after a chemical in the periodic table. The village is called Strontium.
Strontium?
And there's
is that a guess?
I think it's Strontium, but it's because it was discovered in this village. Uh-huh. And it's in a village in the middle of nowhere.
Before we move on to look at some chemical idioms, we'd like to thank our sponsors, Italki, who provide a website for you to go and practice your English with a personal one-to-one teacher in your own time and at your own convenience. If you're feeling a little held back with your English, if you'd like to make more progress more quickly, we recommend Italki as a marketplace to find a teacher that fits your schedule and your pocket, which means you can find a price that's suitable for you. Reza and I have both tried their service. We like it very much, and that's one of the reasons that they're sponsoring our podcast. If you'd like more information, go to inglespodcast.com/italki, I-T-A-L-K-I, and they will give you $10 for signing up with their service, which is usually about one free lesson. We want to say thank you to Italki for sponsoring this podcast, Aprender en Inglés, con Reza y Craig. Reza, can you think of any idioms connected to chemistry while we're on the subject?
I certainly can. Craig has often wondered, he's asked me if I suffer from a chemical imbalance because of my behaviour. He's being euphemistic. He's insinuating that I may have a mental disorder.
I'm being horrible, I'm being nasty, yeah. Not just euphemistic, yeah. I'm being cruel.
So I think I might have a chemical imbalance or something. I've just not been myself lately. I'm feeling a bit odd.
A bit strange.
You could say, what's wrong with you? Do you have some kind of chemical imbalance or something? That means, are you a bit crazy? Are you a bit strange? What's your problem?
Mm. But it's usually negative comment, isn't it? Like, this guy's got a chemical imbalance. He's not all there, you could say. He's weird.
Craig, when are you in your element?
Right now, when I'm podcasting.
You're in your element?
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
Shooting the breeze with you, chewing the cud, chatting about things and generally speaking about English to people who hopefully appreciate learning a thing or two. I'm in my element. I'm really enjoying myself and having a good time. I suspect you're in your element when you're jamming or playing with your group.
I am, but I'm also in my element recording podcasts because I feel there's a chemistry between us.
What does that mean? Chemistry between, we're speaking about chemistry.
There's a chemistry between us can mean that two people have a natural connection. Mm-hmm. They seem to get on well naturally. It could be just friends, could be for lovers as well, but that's not what I'm insinuating with Craig. I'm just saying that I think that we mostly understand each other instinctively. What do you think?
I agree with you. I think there's definitely a chemistry between us on the podcast. And we use that sometimes with students, don't we? Have you ever said to a colleague in the school, this class, you know, it's difficult, it's hard going. There's no chemistry between them. There's no chemistry in the classroom. That means they're not getting on. It's not an easy atmosphere or environment. But it is often used with romance and attraction. Like you feel chemistry with someone, you feel attracted to them as well.
That would be a more like a chemical attraction. That means more romantic if you say attraction.
Yes.
Craig, they say that for every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. What is meant by that?
It sounds like Einstein. Didn't he say that?
Was it him? It might well have been.
I think that's a very scientific fact, but it also could be true in life, perhaps. For everything you do, you kind of get back. In other words, if you do something good for someone, something good will happen to you. But if you're horrible or cruel to someone, then that action will come back to you with an equal and opposite reaction. If you push this hard, someone's going to push against you in reverse. Do you agree with that? Is that how you understand it?
Yeah, that's what I interpret it as. Craig, you used a lot of terms earlier, which I found difficult to understand. I was blinded with science. Blinded with science means that you find it difficult to understand something because it's complicated or it uses expressions that you don't understand. Do you ever feel blinded with science when talking about certain things?
Yeah, there's a lot of things I don't understand, especially technical language, anything to do with physics, mathematics, chemistry, the sciences. I feel completely lost and blinded by science. It just means you can't understand. Maybe it's too technical for you, too deep or too involved.
Craig, who would you say has been the most important chemist in the history of Earth?
Wasn't it Marie Curie who invented penicillin?
No, not penicillin. Did she not discover the properties of radiation? Penicillin was Alexander Fleming, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Pretty sure.
Yep, you're right.
But I would agree with your choice of Marie Curie myself, and a lot of people would debate that. Funnily enough means por cierto. They've just released a film which is out round about now in the cinemas about Marie Curie. That's very interesting because it's a historical drama. So it's based on fact. Marie Curie really was a scientist. She really did exist. But it's kind of mixed in with a bit of kind of Hollywood, exaggeration and stuff. But they go into the idea that purely because she was a woman, she wasn't allowed to be a famous chemist at that time. Women weren't supposed to be chemists.
That's one of the reasons I suggested her, because not only because of what she achieved and accomplished in her life, but the fact that she did all that as a woman in a time when women were not favorably looked upon, which means they weren't approved of in the area of science and physics and chemistry. So that's an incredible thing that she managed to actually succeed in what she did.
And isn't it great that here we are about, I don't know, 100 years later or something, and Maria is writing to us and she's a chemistry teacher.
Yeah.
But it was unthinkable in Marie Curie's day.
Oh, no, it would never happen.
She had to disguise her discoveries as if they were her husband's.
That's right.
She was described as the assistant when in fact he helped her. He didn't know much. It was all her thinking.
So, Maria, thank you very much for your question. We hope we've helped you a little bit. And I do apologize for our lack of knowledge about chemistry. If there's anything else you'd like to know, don't hesitate in writing or sending another message.
Yes. And we apologize for causing the chemical imbalance in you, Maria. I think you said you were an alcoholic. You said you were now addicted to the podcast. So Craig and I profoundly apologize if we have caused a chemical imbalance, but we are only trying to do it to help you.
Well, you know, it's a chain reaction. When you listen to one podcast, you have to listen to more.
That's it. And another, and it just goes on. So we're sorry for that.
Hey, what about Alex's question about Michael Collins? I've heard of him.
Right. A complete change of topic. Michael Collins was a very important figure in Irish history. I'm not an expert on him, but I know the basics. He campaigned for an independent Ireland, and then he was sent by the IRA, the Irish Republican Army, and he was sent by the IRA to represent them in negotiations with the British government.
What sort of year are we talking about here?
Around about 1920, more or less. And they came up with a treaty, and a certain amount of autonomy was given to Ireland, but it wasn't quite 100% converted into a republic. And some Irish people accepted that decision and some didn't.
So it split the country.
It kind of split the country a bit, yeah. And there was a small civil war. And Michael Collins, he was on the pro-treaty side. He was the leader of the pro-treaty. He was determined to stick to the treaty with the British, whereas there were opponents who said, no, we want a better deal. You didn't get us a good deal. And during the time of the fighting, he was in fact executed, some would say, murdered, others would say, in a remote place in the middle of the Irish countryside. So for some people, he was a heroic figure. For others, he kind of sold out. He was a bit of a traitor for some people. He sold out the country and should have asked for more. So he's a divisive figure.
And they did make a very good film about him. I think I saw some of it, but I can't remember it very clearly. I remember it being very well reviewed, and he got some very good reviews. So if you'd like to see that, make sure you watch it in English, of course. Michael Collins, it's kind of like a biography.
Biography, starring Liam Neeson, yeah.
Was it Liam Neeson?
Yeah.
Before we leave you, we have a message from all the way from Central America. So I'd like to say hi to Judith. Hi, Judith. She is a new listener to the podcast. Welcome. And here's Judith's voice message.
Hi, Reza and Craig. I'm Judith. I'm from Central America. It was the first time I listened to you last week, so... it was very fun and so helpful for improve my English. I need to practice because I need a job and the most interviews are English, so I need practice. Your podcast, your last podcast was very funny. So thank you and greetings.
Thank you, Judith. We're so happy you found us. So welcome to the podcast. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, Judith.
Did you hear anything in her message that she could improve on, Reza?
Yes, I heard her say something wrong and something right. The first thing was wrong. Judith, you said that our podcast was very fun, you said. That collocation doesn't exist. You mean good fun or great fun?
Or funny.
Yes, but not very fun.
Right.
Yeah, you said very fun. And I guess you mean muy entretenido. So therefore you can say good fun or great fun. However, later in your message, you correctly said that our podcast last week was very funny. That is correct.
Right.
You said both.
Yeah.
Very funny is correct, but it's a different meaning. Very funny is muy gracioso. So very funny is a good collocation. But the other one should be good fun or great fun. Muy entretenido and very funny, muy gracioso.
Also, Judith, you said, so helpful for improve my English. After prepositions, it's always a gerund, an ing verb. So you should have said, so helpful for improving my English. Speaking about job interviews, we have created some podcasts about that. Episode 13 speaks about job interviews in English, so just go to inglespodcast.com/13. Episode 43, also job interview English, that's inglespodcast.com/43, of course. And we looked at some job interview questions, these typical questions you may get at a job interview, that's back in episode 58. And if you do have a job interview in English coming up soon, you may be interested in our ebook and audio file on how to pass a job interview in English. And you can find that at the Mansion Inglés store. So that's store.mansioninglés.net/downloads. And that's where you'll find the ebook. It's €12. However, if you happen to be a Patreon sponsor of this podcast, you can get it free. Just go to our Patreon page. You can download it from there. Before we go, we'd like to thank our patrons who support the show. Who are they, Reza?
Thanks to Nikolai, Ana, Pedro, Manuel, Garcia, Maite, Lara, Maria, Sara, Carlos, Zara, Mamen, Juan, Cori, Mariel, Jorge, Raúl, Rafael, Manuel Tarazona, Agus, Manuel Velázquez, the third Manuel, Nestor, and Juan Carlos.
Thanks for your continued support. Thanks also to Arminda from Madrid, Alberto from Granada, and Angelica Bello from Madrid, who are helping us to transcribe full episodes. We now have episodes 131 to 142, and Angelica has translated episode 1. As usual, we'd love for you to get in touch. We love hearing your voices, as Judith did, to say hello. If you have a question or an idea for a future episode, or if you just want to say hello and where you're from, send us a voice message at speakpipe.com/inglespodcast. If you want to reach us by email, I'm at Craig, C-R-A-I-G, at inglespodcast.com. Where are you, Reza?
You can find me at belfastreza@gmail.com.
Next week's episode, we'll be speaking about the Cambridge CAE exam, because I don't think we've done that yet. We've spoken about FCE, haven't we? But not the CAE exam. We've received a question, so that's next week's podcast topic. Until then, it's goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me.
The music in this podcast is by Pitts. The track is called See You Later.
Well, the most commonly... Well...
If you go up a mountain, then it boils at a higher temperature. No, a lower temperature. I'm terrible.
Well, what is an atom? They've got quite a few atoms up there. This
yeah, I'd like to split them. And here's Judith's voice message. And here's Judith's voice... That's difficult to say, man.